Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson. Hi, Matt.
What's up, man?
Trying to get funded.
You don't have a chance.
Dude, how do you know, man?
I'm looking at statistics.
That's hard to say. Statistics of getting funded? What does that have to do with me? I'm not a statistic. I'm a real live human.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I want to hear your pitch.
Well, yeah, that's it. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. I got this idea. I don't have any competition. And I'm positive that I'll be able to get like 50 to 80% market share in 3 to 6 months. So I'm pretty sure people are going to want to throw money at me. But, you know, I want to talk about it. I think you might change your mind about me getting funded. I think we acknowledge that getting funded sucks. When we started the podcast series, that was the title of episode 2. Whether you are aware, I don't think episode 2 was powered by Fullscale.io, much like today's episode, because Fullscale wasn't a thing then, but it is now. And hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. You know, Matt, so many Startup Hustle listeners have gone to Fullscale and filled out a simple form, man, 2 minutes worth of questions, and we'll be able to match you up with people that can hopefully solve your technical problems and make your technical dreams come true. And maybe that will result in getting funded. But Matt, when you think about the real story of getting funded, I mean, what comes to mind other than the fact that we know it sucks?
I mean, it usually involves begging friends and family for money and using MasterCard and Visa. That was my experience.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to that because you're actually right about that, because most people think that getting funded means bringing in actual investors. And in the earliest stages, it usually doesn't. Why?
No.
Because the real story of getting funded is that a lot of the money out, there's a lot of people looking for money. There's a lot of people that write checks and provide that money, but it comes in different shapes and forms. And inherently, when you have an idea on the back of a bar napkin, that's not usually fundable by other people, but it is certainly fundable by yourself and other folks. You know, now Matt, did you actually have outside money at any point at Venn Solutions, which, by the way, if you're unaware, that was a company that Matt was involved with that had a rather large exit in 2012.
So we started that company in 2003 and it was completely bootstrapped. At some point in time, like 2 or 3 years later, a friend slash customer, I think, you know, might have put in like $100,000 or something like that when we really needed it. And then at one point in time, we sold off part of the business that we didn't want to do anymore. It had to do with like a service part of the business. And I think we got like another $100,000 for that. So we built we built a business that did $30 million a year in annual revenue from, I guess, $200,000 of total investment. That was not my MasterCard or Visa.
Yeah, when it's all said and done, that led to an acquisition of roughly $150 million. So congratulations on that again. But, you know, there's, a, you know, so here's the fact. So we're going to tell the real story. And with that, I want to give a disclaimer. We're not trying to be negative about getting funded. We're trying to be realistic and we're trying to be honest and tell you what you can expect. So I don't want the comments that we make today to sound discouraging or negative for those of you that have dreams. But but here's the thing. Our goal and our experience is going to hopefully be useful and help you avoid wasting your time, potential pitfalls. And then there's shitfalls too. That's like getting yourself in a shitty situation you don't want to be in. And here's the fact, high potential startups attract the most investors, but that capital does come with a caveat. They become your business partners or own part of your business. And the real numbers on this is 0.05%. That's
0.1 in 2,000.
Right. Actually raise venture capital. Now look, getting funded comes in many shapes and forms. And in the earliest stages is almost always things like personal savings, right? I have an idea. That's how it started for me.
So it totally depends on the type of business, right? If you're like, oh, I want to start a lawn care business or whatever, you're like, hey, I need enough money to go buy some equipment and a truck or whatever. It's not a huge capital expense. But if you're like, I want to go buy, create a software company or buy some big building I need or whatever it is for some other kind of business, it can be very expensive. Even opening a restaurant now is extremely expensive, right? You like need a grease trap and all this expensive bullshit. I mean, you spend $100, $200,000.
Restaurants on almost any level are hyper expensive.
They're very expensive.
That's why things like food trucks, which are still expensive. I mean, it's still like in many cases, a $50,000 to $150,000 kind of expense. And you know, let's define startups. A startup is a business that doesn't come with an owner's manual, by my definition. But in this case, could also be like opening a Subway franchise or something like that. Your reality is, here's the thing: it's starting a new business from scratch. When I define what a startup is, like a franchise comes with an owner's manual and an 800 number. Startups don't. You're usually figuring it out. But I think that a lot of the information we'll talk about and share today will apply to both. Now, so we've got a list here with some statistics of where startups getting funded. And the top of the list is that makes me honestly question the data a little, because it says banks and other loans, 35%. But here's the reality. Banks do not give loans to brand new businesses, i.e. startups. Like, hey, I've got an idea. Here's my plan. I'm going to build this software platform and I need $1 million to do it. Unless you have a hell of a lot of collateral to back that loan up, you don't have a shot at it. Now, if you do have collateral, you can probably get a loan however you want it. It might not be at the rate or the terms that you're looking for now. But the other loans, I mean, that can be a lot of different things. So, you know, but please know, I'm back into that don't waste your time thing. If you have a tech startup that has no traction, no revenue, nothing, don't bother with the bank. I mean, you have 0% chance. They won't even give most software companies a loan that aren't profitable on paper yet.
Well, and you got to be careful. You don't want to just get a second mortgage on your house and cash out your 401k and all that kind of stuff, which people do. And I one company I invested in as an angel investor, a couple of the founders did that actually. They cashed in their 401k and there was some like special government thing for that they could take advantage of. And they've been really successful. The company's exploded.
I did that. Jill and I did that when we were building Gigabook before you came in and partnered with us, because this isn't financial advice, because we are not financial advisors. We're not dealer or brokers of that kind of services. But you can reshape your retirement savings, which into reinvesting into quote stock or stuff like that. And you can repurpose some of it and you know, do it with your retirement savings, meaning you can take a 401k, which if you're not 59 and a half years old, you have to pay a bunch of penalties on. You can avoid those. And that is, I don't honestly even want to get too far into that, because that's complex. You're going to need a financial advisor and an accountant said advice, but you can do it. But next on the list is personal savings. And this is the one that is, I think, is 100%, because Matt, all the businesses I've started or involved in now, definitely started with some level of personal savings. This is easily the most common. Bet on yourself if you want. That's really what that comes down to.
Absolutely. Yep. Definitely did that one.
Be careful though. Do be careful. Like Matt said, like taking a second mortgage out on your home or putting your life savings in, I mean, it can be hard to get that back. I mean, the real story of getting funded in startups in general is you have a much greater chance of failing than succeeding, which is part of why it pays richly at the end for many of us. So just know it. But that's the easiest path. Why? Because it's your money. You can make your decisions with it. And quite honestly, man, I think that when you're using your own money, for a lot of people, that's a huge stressor. And for others, it's a big driver.
Well, it's very stressful to use other people's money. That's for sure. Absolutely.
Next on the list, man, friends and family.
Yep.
I don't like the family one.
No.
I'm just being honest. I have overwhelmingly avoided that part. Because here's the thing. If you fuck it up, you got to see them at Christmas and Thanksgiving and whatever. And I've been exposed to a couple situations where parents or sisters or cousins took a browbeating because they invested in and their kids or their family or whatever. Just be careful with it, right? Just be careful with it.
I mean, it's hard because you also want your family to be successful, right? So if you're doing something and there's going to be a lot of reward from it, you'd rather spread that reward around to the family, but it's also balancing the risk associated with it. So
I have had friends and family in on things, but they weren't like the initial day one kind of stuff as an investor. It was later that there were things that it was really more so things where we were leveraging different financial quote things. And I just wanted them to benefit from it too, because why not? You know, giving money to if you know that it's going back, I'd rather give that interest to someone else than maybe the first bank of wherever.
Absolutely.
Okay. The next one. This is my favorite: credit cards. If you've read my book $1 Million Bedroom, which by the way, dude, I just reduced I don't care about making money on that book, and it is 99 cents on Kindle right now.
Okay.
And that's the permanent price. Cause I'd rather, that's the cheapest that Amazon will let me make it. Both of my books are, cause I'd rather have you read it. Your $10 people, it's not as valuable to me as that 99 cents is going to be for you if you read it. But I started my first business in the extra bedroom in my home with no money. It was like the worst time of my life. I had a credit card with an $8,000 limit. And that really is truly where my entrepreneur journey began. And everything we still do has roots to that original credit card in many ways. And if you are in the business of buying and selling things, or like you mentioned, like a lawn business or something like that, I mean, you can go out and buy a freaking lawnmower with a credit card and get started.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
And with that, I leveraged my friends and family's credit cards because I was a ticket broker at the time and we were buying and selling tickets. So we were paying the money back and everything. And my friends and family benefited from a shit ton of points.
Yep. Rewards,
when
baby.
When I walked away from that business, my friends and family were like, dude, I mean, I had one of my buddies tell me he had kids. He's like, I haven't paid for a diaper yet because he was using all of his points for stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's an easy one. Once again, though, be careful, because what we're talking about here is leverage. Leverage means you're using OPM, other people's money, to get where you want. Now, that can be a very powerful principle, but when you're on the wrong side of that lever and it breaks or doesn't move the object, it can be ugly. Is that fair?
It's a lot of risk. Yep.
All right,
especially
next.
If it's a 20% interest.
Well, that's my point. And right now, you know, we're recording this in the fourth quarter of 2022, and rates are the highest that they've been
in a long time that
I can even remember. And they're getting ready to go higher. So all that stuff ebbs and flows with it. All right. Next, angel investors. These are little tiny sentient beings that come down from the heavens with halos and grant you cash, right?
Well, that I think the reason you would call them an angel investor is they're usually investing at the very, very earliest stage, like before, you know, you've even built something, you have no customers. I mean, it's
they're
an
not
idea.
Not actual angels?
I mean, I'm they an angel.
A little
I'm
bit.
An angel.
In your world, they will feel like an angel.
Yes, for sure.
I think that's why they call them angels. So this has a lot of different meanings to some people. You know, an angel is like, I see it the same way as you mentioned, Matt. Some people will also refer to this as seed investors in some stages. Like they're the earliest stage. Now, look, that comes with the highest risk for the investor because and once again, you haven't proven shit at that point. So if you're going to bring in angel investors, just know that that's a real thing. And you're going to probably give up more than you might want later. But if you're not going to get to step five without this being step one or two, then it's the way it goes. 5.8% of startups get funding from angel investors. I think that number's probably about right. Do you?
I'm actually surprised it's that high. I mean, that's like 1 in 20. Yeah. So,
well, and so here's the number that conflicts with the prior stats that we saw. And it says venture capital is over 4%.
This might be based on the total number of dollars, not the percentage of the companies. I think this is based on the dollars.
Yeah. So as opposed to number of businesses. Okay. Yeah.
That's
and then
the
here's the thing
from.
Though, we've had episodes about this. What the fuck is a startup? Because I read the Wall Street Journal this morning and it was referring to like, they still refer to Uber as a startup.
Is WeWork still a startup?
Is WeWork exist? Is that a thing?
I think they still exist. Yeah.
I do too. Speaking of funding, did you see the former WeWork founder raised
as
hundreds of millions of dollars in pre-seed capital? I'm like, hey.
For a mystery new thing.
Hey, you know what? I might have invested in Adam Neumann. I mean, that dude's experienced some shit, man. He's definitely got a brand around it, whether you like it or not. All right. And then the last one, government related. So what is government? That's at 2%. Man, there are a hell of a lot of grants, programs, a ton of stuff. If you're not aware, we record this episode and all four of our recurring hosts are in Kansas City. We have things like Launch KC. Go to launchkc.org. They've actually sponsored this podcast a lot and they will, in November of 2022, give out, Matt, you're going with me, whether you knew that or not. There is an event where they will announce their quote cohort. So they've got, I think it's 7 or 8 companies that they'll give 50, they give them 50 grand, all of them. Now, this is a real thing. That's non-dilutive capital in that case, meaning they don't become a partner. That's straight cash.
And there's a lot of these types of programs all over the country, depending on where you live, based at the city or state level. Yeah. So definitely look for
them. You got to look for them, and they're not going to be fast. Just know
most people don't know they exist.
Yeah, because they don't use Google and look for it. I mean, there really is so much of this stuff around. And then with that, I also want to, there's a lot of programs too that are hyper specific, meaning like they fund female entrepreneurs or just any level, anything that's a diversity, I use air quotes, their kind of category, or group them together. And if that's you, flex it, go for it. Cause that's what it's there for. I think it's awesome. Now, look, when you get some, so the cool part about the government and these grants, so we mentioned Launch KC, go to launchkc.org. You could be considered for that. We also have a thing here called Digital Sandbox, which are $20,000 grants. There's a bunch of stuff like that. Now, the cool part about being involved in those things is that's kind of like a Boy Scout or Girl Scout badge, and it gives you some validation, some street cred, and there's a lot of you have a high likelihood of getting a follow on. Now, there's a couple of things too that aren't government related. You have things like Y Combinator, TechStars, incubators, accelerators. We went to a dinner the other night out of Columbia, Missouri.
Scale.
They're huge startups. Yeah, scale-vc.com. Brett's been on the show with us before. And that's a seed funding mechanism. And an immersive 12-week course that has people like Willie from Equipment Share. That's a 2,500 person company. The founder of Zapier is involved with that.
Yeah.
Zapier, that's a mega corp, man. Like, it's a huge enterprise. I mean, we're getting involved with it. And this, and so there's some really cool stuff out there. But so, Matt, you know, we're talking about the real funding. So this is where some of it comes from. But how does funding work? Like, how does it actually work? Do you just like, hey, dude, you're funded, here's your check, good luck. Is it that easy?
I mean, sometimes with those grants, it's that easy. You know, a lot of companies these days.
It's not that easy because it's an exhaustive process to get to it.
But it's, but when it's harder. Say yes,
they might be like, here's the money.
Grants are probably going to be a little easier, right? Because you're not giving up equity and stuff. But when you're giving up equity, you're going to have to deal with doing some sort of convertible note or SAFE agreements, which are real common these days. What you don't want to do is spend an amazing amount of money on a PPO or whatever it's called and all this stuff that nobody does anymore. But some lawyer is might convince you to do that and charge you a fortune for it.
I'm gonna decode your acronyms. SAFE, S-A-F-E, note, simple agreement for future equity. It's a very common early stage form of structuring the investment. So we see, how does funding work? It does have to have a structure around it in most cases. I owned part of I was an investor in a fitness equipment delivery company. That was just a straight transaction. I just bought equity. There was no convertible note. But be familiar with these terms. So convertible note means that turns it actually at first is structured like a loan. And then at some point, there are things that would trigger it converting into shares. Those triggers can be different in every situation.
And as an investor, convertible notes are interesting because I just did one recently and I'm getting 8% interest, which is pretty good. And then at some point in time, I have the option of saying, you know what, I'd rather just have my money back and have the interest, or do I want to convert it into equity? And I might have the ability to say if I want to or not to, or I may not, depending on how they structure it. But sometimes those are nice and they're also debt. So if anything happens, I have to get paid back first. Yeah. And so that is one of the pros of debt-based stuff with doing convertible notes. The reason that convertible notes and safes are used a lot is when you're starting out a company, it's really hard to figure out what it's worth. And you could spend forever trying to figure out, is this worth $500,000, $1 million, $10 million, whatever the number is. And it just makes it easy for an angel investor to say, look, I'll give you $100,000. We don't really know what this is or what it's worth or what it's going to be yet. So we're going to sign this safe agreement that says, once we figure that out and we figure out what the valuation of it is later, this is kind of how I expect to be treated later.
Simplified version of that. I want to invest in Matt's company. We don't know what it's worth. I give him $500,000 and we sign a very simple agreement that says that my price will reflect a percentage of the next money that comes in. So when an investor comes in at a later round, and these things often have terms like caps on them. So in this fictional agreement, I give Matt $500,000 and the cap would be a $5 million valuation. Now, what I want to see is Matt go to work, kill it, and then get a $10 million money at a $10 million valuation, but that cap is the investor, it protects me as the investor, meaning I'm going to max that cap out. And I would own roughly 10%, $500K into 5 million is in that ballpark where the next, so the cap is there to protect the investor. There are also discounts on the downside in case it comes in below. So the thing I like about a safe note, which is kind of a new thing over the last decade, which is really a Silicon Valley.
It came creation. Out of Y Combinator, right?
Well, I think so. Yeah. And these are like a few pages, not like complex shit. And it's intended to be fair and equitable for both parties. And it's really the main thing is like, hey, I think we might be onto something, but it's not fair to you. It's not fair to us to try to truly peg a value on
or spend thousands of dollars on legal fees trying to do a bunch of crap. So the safe agreement, you can just like go Google it and download a copy of it and use it. Doesn't mean you shouldn't have a lawyer, but you don't need to spend a ton of money on legal bills to do this.
Yeah. And like once again, that the lightweight nature of that, you might be thinking, oh, is that really that big of a deal? I'd want to learn. Man, these things get complex in a hurry and they get expensive.
Well, maybe you'll spend a few $100s on a lawyer instead of a few $1,000s on a lawyer. That's the key.
You're my attorney.
Do they do anything for a few $100s?
Maybe. Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. You're not my attorney. Daryl, our COO at Full Scale, is on some days. Like, it's, I mean, why? Because like we have to review a lot of documents, agreements, and stuff like that. It's the struggle's real on that one, man. So, okay. So, you know, we're telling the real story. We've kind of outlined a lot of this stuff and the reality that comes with it, but how do you get it? Is the thing that we need to talk about in the second half of this and what's going to likely happen along that path. So look, when you go out to do this, the people that you're wanting money from, I want to encourage you to come proper. Be prepared. Show what the problem you're solving, how you're going to solve it, what is that business like? And then the important part of, you got to demonstrate, if you want the best conversations and the best possibilities, you need to demonstrate how your investors are going to get a return on what you're doing.
The problem is most people start a company and honestly, none of them will ever raise money from venture capital because the idea is not big enough. And so, for example, correct, when we had dinner with the guys from Scale the other day, so they're an incubator here in Missouri, like you just mentioned.
Scale-VC.com.
Definitely check them out.
Put a link in the show notes for that. Yeah.
Just but he told me, he's like, you know what? We're only looking for ideas that have the potential to be $1 billion company.
Yep.
So your little lawn service business, not going to make a cut, right? So it's got to be a company that can really scale to be really big. Because most venture capitalists have no interest in investing, you know, $500,000 in something that maybe one day you'll do $1 million a year in revenue. Like that is like, that's peanuts to them. They're not even going to waste their time talking about it. It's got to grow into be tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in annual revenue before you're going to get and attract that kind of investor.
Let's break that down for a second because we're mentioning a fund. So what's consists of these funds? Why we're at dinner with these people, the fund managers and organizations go out and look for people that want to put their money into the quote fund,
yeah,
knowing that fund, which will have a specific amount, in this case, it was $5 million that they were raising. And they were courting us as investors to put money in, where Matt and I may or may not choose to do that, but they also wanted some involvement from us. So it's a value add there, which is interesting and attractive to us because realistically that they're going to do the hardest work of going and finding, let's just say 20 companies to put $250,000 into. What we would get as investors there is a diversity of portfolio companies, yeah, that we're hoping down the road end up getting acquired, sold, or something. That money gets returned to the fund. The fund will pay us according to what percentage of the fund we put our money in at. So $5 million, if we put in $500,000, we may have 10% of the fund, so that's the mechanics of how that works. And I mean, for me, that's attractive because it's in some ways like it's similar to a mutual fund that's going to have a diversified approach. So it's not like just putting all that money in one company. You're like, God, that better come in big.
Well, and the problem with being an angel investor, from my experience, is it's a huge hassle to meet with a whole bunch of people to invest in,
yep,
do due diligence in them, meet them, decide to invest, and then go through all that process. Where otherwise I can go to some place like Scale, write them a check, and then never talk about it ever again. And they put my money to work.
Or maybe even be involved, which for us, like we do that anyway, and that we're attractive partners and involvement there because we've got stuff like this podcast. And
that's why you have a lot of angel investors pull their money together in these kinds of funds because it's so much work, especially if you only invest, say, $10,000 each in 20 companies, like the amount of work it takes to meet all of them
point, that sounds like a freaking nightmare.
Yeah.
Like much easier. That's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of coordination. And here's the thing is like from an investor side of things, like If you're going to get an investor or get funded, you need to give strong consideration to like, do you want that person involved? Do you not want them involved? Like, what does that mean?
What value do they
some
bring?
Some people are going to want, do you, and we don't have to name them, but do you remember when we had a guy come in that wanted to invest in Full Scale? And he's like, yeah, but I'm going to come here and work one day a week. I want to get paid. I want to be involved. And we were like,
no,
I don't know if you're the right fit for what we do. So
we didn't need a babysitter.
Yeah. So by the way, I want to expand on this too, because we're actually participating in a really interesting event. And we did, I did a podcast called Midwest Startup Funding, if you want to look for the title. But so Flyover Capital, which Dan Kerr, the people from Flyover, multiple different people have been on this show over the years. They're a supporter of what we do, and we're helping them sponsor an event that they're calling Mid by Midwest. That's, if you want to, the URL is midxmidwest.com. And see what I love what they're doing, because they're vetting companies. They're looking for companies that are going to really, really have a possibility to like move instantly if they get funded. And they're, so they're bringing in 50 companies and 50 funds. I mean, dude, that for me, if I was raising in an earlier stage, that would, that sounds like a fantasy wonderland.
Yeah. I'm excited for that event.
Well, but and we're going to participate in it, but on a founder level, man, like getting, so look for stuff like that. Other things too, is like, Matt, I haven't been involved with it like you have, but we have a thing here called, what was it? Mid-America Angels. So in that case, that was really attractive for, that's just a whole bunch of pre-qualified people that want to write checks either individually or maybe even together. And they'll put you in front of all those folks.
There are angel groups like that all over the country.
So my point is there's a lot of things where you can, rather than, we're talking about how do you go get the money? Well, either you're going to have to reach out and find these things individually, apply, pitch, go through that whole bit. But what, dude, would you rather go to a place that has 10, 15, 50 of them all in one spot there with the attention of wanting to talk to you? Or do you rather go out and grind?
Well, and a lot of them can bring other things to the table, right? You're like, oh, I'm creating some kind of software I want to sell into K-12 schools, right? Well, chances are you go into these angel groups. Maybe there's an investor there that's done that before or whatever, that might have some connections or whatever. So
that understands and appreciates the problem you're trying to solve. Yeah.
Yep.
And so, then a lot of those people too, like, I don't want to discourage you from having your investors involved. There's two terms that are kind of, a lot of people talk about smart money or dumb money. Dumb money is a check that doesn't provide anything other than money. Smart money is when you get the kind of investors that are also advisors, they can do a lot of things. So what does that look like? That could be introductions, advice. Maybe they'll become your first client.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and in some cases too, like we actually, and we're allowed to talk about this, by the way, you and I just invested in Lending Standard, who's a client at Full Scale.
Yep.
So my point is like, you look at that, these options exist around you. You have to be peripheral. You have to be looking around and knowing that they're there. And, you know, Andy at Lending Standard's been on the show before, but we got to know him. I mean, it wasn't fast. And that's what I want to talk about next, Matt. If you think you're getting funded quickly, or you are put yourself in a spot where your business is about to run out of money, if you don't get funding in the next month, you're fucked. This stuff never, the angel investments are your only real chance of getting someone else's money in your account quickly, other than maybe a loan or a credit card.
Yeah. VC type investments probably take months, and angel type investments may take weeks. So they can be pretty fast, you know, especially
angel
if it's somebody
write you,
you
check
know.
Tomorrow. They can write you a check today or tomorrow. And honestly, so what we found, dude, have you noticed that, like, okay, the angel options that I see, they often don't get into anything. They're like betting on founders, like almost purely on founders. So one thing we didn't mention that I thought, so at Full Scale, we didn't actually sell equity. Matt and I own it like 50-50. And we didn't want us, we needed some capital at one point, and we created venture debt. We created our own lending pool, and people we knew put money in, and we paid them an amortized return, and they got a good return. Like Sandy
Kemper. Yeah, we paid them a high interest rate.
Well, Sandy Kemper from C2FO was one of those people, and he acknowledged the last time I hosted him. He was like, thank you. That's been a great thing. And now with that, one thing I noticed is none of those people looked at our pitch deck or proposition, any of it. Those were people that were pure players in Matt and Matt.
Yep.
Right. And that was it. And, you know, and hey, look, dude, that came together quickly and effectively. It's been good for us. It's been great for the lenders. I say lenders because you're not allowed, they're not investors at that point because they aren't.
Right. They don't
have a vested interest in shares. But, you know, there's some things you can put out there and put together. Once again, I want to let you know that if you're going to do that, be careful, though, because when it comes to angel investors, we should have mentioned this earlier, there are some restrictions around that. That you might have in some levels that you need to be aware of.
Accredited investor.
An accredited investor, which by the way, has a moving target definition over my lifetime as an entrepreneur. It's evolved and changed, but
you have to make like a certain amount of money a year or have a certain
network. Your sister that works part-time at McDonald's and is in college is not an accredited investor unless she has inherited a shitload of something that is sitting somewhere on the side, which probably means she ain't working part-time at McDowell's. Is it McDowell's or McDonald's? Coming to America, it was McDowell's. Almost the same, right? Okay. All right. So I want to throw a couple of quick definitions out there because I think it's good to understand this. We mentioned angel. That can be like also pre-seed or in some cases seed funding. It's the earliest stage. It's the earliest stage, and it's usually you. It might be other people close to you. And then let's talk about true seed funding is for a lot of people where the real funding journey and rocket ship begins. This is where, like we mentioned, an organization like Scale, go to scale-vc.com. These are organizations that are comfortable with writing a check and to an early stage company. Right. So for in my world, and our notes are like, they usually go between 3 and 6 million raised. Not in my experience. These are usually checks that are 50 to 500 K.
Well, this is the notes here say that's what the companies are valued. Right?
Oh, valued at. Yeah. You know, if I knew how to read, I would be so much better at this show.
The most interesting thing here is it says even companies that are raising seed funding, those companies are on average 3 years old already.
Yeah. And so there's that evolution that comes in. Now, look, if you're brand new, that's not a selling point. It's not.
I want to see that you fought for this for at least a little while.
Yeah. So, but the seed money comes in and this is the stage that many people get to. And that might be it. Now, when I say it, a lot of businesses become self-sufficient after
they don't need it.
It's not uncommon. And then a lot of them get the seed, comes in, and things don't go the way that they hope. They hire developers that aren't productive, which feels like a good time to mention. If you need help finding expert software developers, that's what we do at Full Scale. Go to fullscale.io and we'll help you build a team quickly and affordably. It only takes a couple minutes to answer a couple questions. We put expert people in front of you, can help you build that team. People sometimes ask me, like, what do you sell at Full Scale? Is it like programmers, websites, whatever? I said, we sell peace of mind. We do the vetting and find qualified people that can help you go and get it done. Now, I mentioned seed rounds falling apart. When I talk to people who have had things implode at that round, they realized there wasn't the market or the competition was a little stiffer than they thought, or they brought in the wrong people and kept them around too long.
Well, and I think one of the things we should talk about as we start to wrap this up is when you're have an early stage company. There's several different avenues you can take. You know, you don't necessarily need to go raise a bunch of money. I love the incubators and going through the incubators like Scale or Techstars or Y Combinator, all these things. Obviously, it's really hard to get into Y Combinator. It's going to be a lot of competition for that. But there are a lot of those accelerator programs, and there's been a lot of them in Kansas City. Like, what were those called?
What, like Launch KC?
Well, there were some other incubators that we had too. Yeah.
Digital Sandbox was one. We had a Fountain Innovation Fund. There's
a
lot of things.
There's been a few of them.
Really a lot. Like this is not an uncommon thing, people. Like, I mean, they exist.
Those are great.
For all industries, for all verticals. Now, if we get outside of Kansas City, there's things like Arch Grants in St. Louis gives 50 grand to 20 different companies. It's $1 million. And then the thing is if you give a little bit of consideration, there's a lot of things that'll match that kind of money.
Yes.
So you could turn, I could turn 50 grand into 150 grand in the state of Missouri alone, because there are other things that'll tack money on. Because once one person, so that's the reality of this, is one, the first check's the fucking hardest to get, man.
Well,
right?
Absolutely. So there's definitely a herd mentality with all of this. And you mentioned earlier, like, oh, we got a grant for Launch KC. We got some money from this thing. We got this one angel investor. Next thing you know, the herd starts to collect, and other people are willing to put money in because somebody else has already put money in. And yeah, those first couple ones are really hard. But once you start getting some money coming in, then those first investors also become your allies, because they're like, hey, I don't want this thing to fail. I got to find some other people to put money into this thing to make this work. Like, they become almost part of the team, whether they realize it or not, right? Because they want to see it be successful.
The real story of that is rich people often just mimic what other rich people are doing.
Well, you have a lot of people.
I mean, on some levels, there's a lot of truth to that. Like, we've seen that. And it's like, hey, if John's going to write a check, I will too.
Well, especially if it's about something they don't know, right? Like, oh, I met with this tech company. That sounds pretty cool. I don't know anything about tech. You know, I'm a lawyer and I make money doing that or whatever, but I've got an extra 100 grand. I'd love to invest in tech. So if, you know, Matt DeCourcy says this is a good investment, then I'll do it. You know, you're definitely going to have that. That happens a lot.
Yeah. And you know, we've actually done investor meetings with people and they're like, hey, I want to come in, but I'm bringing two other, is it okay if I bring two other people that often do follow-ons with me? Yes. Thank you.
Absolutely.
In fact, let's do that. You know, speaking of giving a couple shout outs and bringing people along, I want to give a shout out to Lane Rockley, who is the founder of Digit, who sent me a message on LinkedIn this morning and thanked us for doing our 52-part series about how to start a tech company. Lane, thanks for being a listener, man. He sent a really great message. I posted it in the Startup Hustle chat. I want to encourage you to come join that on Facebook as well. But Lane mentioned in his message that 52-part series, especially while starting a tech company within the context of a pandemic, helped them feel like, he said, literally said, helped us feel like we're not alone. And all of it, the reason I'm bringing that up is thanks for paying attention, Lane. We acknowledge that, and we hope things do well at Digit. That sounds like, dude, that's of all things that I never would have guessed. It is a startup that helps make archaeology records paperless.
Oh, wow.
Who would have thought, bro? There's riches in the niches. Best of luck with your startup, Lane, and thanks for paying attention. But you know, my point here is there is an unlimited amount of information, maybe even just on this podcast, about this kind of stuff. Scroll back through the feed. We have so many episodes about funding, getting funded, and then we had a 52-part series about how to start a tech company as well, and we cover some of it in there. Case in point, I dropped out of 5 fucking colleges. I don't have a degree, man. I've done great without it. You know why? I know how to Google stuff. I'm good at Googling.
That's your degree. I'm going to get you a little plaque that says that.
Well, my degree's, I'm hoping.
You have a BS soon. In Google.
I definitely have a BS in something. Yeah, I'm holding out. I'm not accepting that degree, Matt. My next degree is likely to come as an honorary degree from some school in the Philippines, where we've signed six agreements with computer science schools to work with them to try to.
Yeah.
Bring in some talented awesome people. Yeah, that's a thing. But hey, look, there's a ton of stuff out there. I'm going to go through a rapid fire list of some other stuff because we're about out of time. These are other places where people get funding, whatever. As a quick reminder, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io. Hey, we got a lot of great stuff going on, a lot of great people that want to help you build your tech. Only go to Fullscale.io. It takes 2 minutes to fill that out. Really cool stuff. It's going to match you up with people. All right, here's some other suggestions. We didn't mention the SBA. It's the Small Business Administration. That's under the government category. SBA micro loans. What's a micro loan? These are like, it's funny. They refer to up to $50,000 as micro. I have a feeling a lot of people listening right now don't, $50,000 in their world isn't micro. But a true micro lender are private and nonprofit lenders that basically pool money together and use different platforms to give these loans out in small scale, they're going to probably come with a pretty high rate of return. You know, it's possible you can leverage regular loans, although there are some better options. We didn't mention crowdfunding. When I first started at my first true company, I started as an entrepreneur, equity crowdfunding wasn't even legal. It wasn't like, cause it wasn't possible. And those laws have been changed, relaxed, and restructured. So what's crowdfunding? There are literally platforms that will vet you as a company and then let you sell equity through that to people that it's almost like,
that are not accredited.
It's like GoFundMe or Kickstarter for this.
Yeah. And those are investors that are not accredited.
Yeah. And that's the I don't know what the workaround is with that or whatever, but it exists. And that's a real thing, man. And that's it really gone well. So, all right, Matt. So as we close this out, like, I mean, first off, this could be like a day long episode. So hopefully we gave you some real tips, and with the real story being the title here, you know, can some candor involved, but what do you want to say on the way out, dude?
I think when you're starting your company, you've got to very quickly decide, is this a company that has to raise capital or not? And if it's a company that has to raise capital, for example, if you're trying to create Uber or something, you're like, this is going to have to be big and be in a lot of places and whatever. And it's going to be capital intensive, right? That's a different path. Ultimately, what you want to do is set yourself up for success where if you don't raise capital, the business could potentially still be successful. So many people instead of finding a technical co-founder or somebody to work part-time with some sweat equity or whatever to get us moving forward and building the product or doing whatever we need to do, they just become like professionals at trying to raise money, and they never actually accomplish anything, and then they never raise the money. So I think you also have to have a path there where you have like path A, B, C, and one of those paths is like, look, we're going to bootstrap this thing and we're going to figure out how to make it work even if we never raise any money.
Well said. And I agree with all of it. A couple taglongs with that. Hey, look, get ready to be humbled. This is a humbling process. If you're going to go out and raise capital, get ready to hear no, and get ready to talk to as many people as it takes to get what you want. If you're not prepared or ready to do that, then you're not going to get funded. In the history of the show, as I've talked to different people, I'd say, and I'll ask how many different pitches or whatever you get, it's usually between 50 and 100. It's not five, you know? So some people might be at that lower number, but the reality is it's going to be a lot. You know, much like Matt said, if you don't need to raise it, then don't. On the flip side of that, I hear a lot of people, they're like, no, I'll never do the Darth Vader venture capital stuff. I don't think that venture capital is a bad thing. I don't know, why are they evil? These are like really well-connected, experienced people that want to put a lot of money in your company and that have a vested interest in your success. I'm not really sure what's terrible about that. So, but if you do decide to bring on investment, you need to remember that these people are your business partners, and it is harder to get rid of them than it might be to get rid of a spouse.
Yep.
So they're going to, I wrote that in Million Dollar Bedroom. Like, it is easier to get rid of your wife or your husband than it is to get rid of a business partner. So know what you're getting into and know that there's a situation that exists. I do want to strongly encourage you to get good advice and legal advice and, you know, and with these agreements, remember, they should include sunny and rainy day provisions. They shouldn't just be written in a way when everything's awesome. You got to think about what happens, because, you know, there's a lot, we hear a lot of stories. I hear more horror stories about people that have non-productive co-founders than shitty investors in the end. But, you know, think about what you're doing and think about, just sit down and try to consider 10 different outcomes based on 10 different scenarios and give yourself time. And remember, this isn't a fast process. If you're going after institutional money, like venture funds and stuff like that, realistically, you're looking at 4 to 9 months. The smaller number might be that long just to get a yes, and then you got to go through a process to get the money completed. And in the final thing I want to say, I'll give you the mic back here. Most of these deals fall apart before they actually happen.
The most important thing is networking. And look at the opportunity of everybody who says no to ask them, like, hey, do you know somebody else who does invest in this type of thing or knows something about this that I should talk to? Right. Because just like you're going to meet with somebody that's like, oh, I don't know anything about investing in tech and this scares me, to ask them, well, who do you know that does? Right. It's just all about networking.
Yep. And, you know, hey, do it.
Hustle.
Do it. Okay. That was only five or six. Like, that's a represent. Like, you're going to need to get to 100. That's how many pitches you're going to get. Matt, I'm out of here, man. I'm all fired up. I'm going to go raise some capital, even though you told me I couldn't.
All right. See ya.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.